As the last few people are walking out, I'll go ahead and say, tonight kind of reminds me of when I was in elementary school and the weather would get so nice and the teachers would get so frustrated because all the kids were a lot more rowdy and they were just ready to get outside. I feel like we might be a rowdy bunch tonight. This would be good. All right, so there's only 2 weeks left of the class. Oh, that's how quick things are flying by. Next class, we'll plan to do anxiety. Hopefully it doesn't worry anybody. And then our last class will be culture. Thanks. We'll finish up with culture. But tonight, we're going to talk about work. Pretty excited to talk about work. This is a good one. So how many people are working? We got full-time or part-time? So we'll drop the part-time. People working full-time? There's some people unsure if they're working. All right. So this is good. I don't know. Some of you are probably a little skeptical on the question, trying to figure out what I meant by are you working? Because it's hard. Whenever we say somebody working, we usually mean are you getting in a car and going somewhere, and are they taking taxes out of your paycheck? But work is something that we're called to do as Christians. So really, we all, our hands shoot up. We all do some sort of work, or we all should be doing some sort of work. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And the Bible has a lot to say about work. And when we think of work relating to finances, there's about 2,300 verses in the Bible that talk about money. And when we look at what Jesus talks about the most, he talks more about finances, money, than he does heaven and hell combined. Because it's important. And our relationship to work is important. And so we'll talk through some of that. We recently had Mother's Day. If you forgot, it was Mother's Day recently. But the finance podcast, they went through, and they do it every year, where they talk about how important moms are from the time and effort that they put into being a mom. And so their little analysis that they did is for stay-at-home moms, that they work about 80 hours a week between all the chauffeuring, the caring, the nurse, the chef, all the things that they do. And if you added up how much it would cost, average American cost, to pay somebody to do all those things, in 2025 it's about $230,000 to get somebody to do all that for you. So I would say all the moms absolutely doing work. It's much appreciated. But it helps us think about what are all the things that we do that are work that we're not necessarily getting a paycheck and that we're not necessarily having to pay taxes on, all of those things. And there's a lot. There's work that we're supposed to be doing. So most of this idea, again, don't have new ideas normally, we just find them, comes from a book by David Bahnsen. I don't know if anybody's heard that name before, but he's an economist. He has a weekly segment on the world and everything in it, which is a news podcast. And he wrote a book, and it's called, well, before I give you the title, he wrote it in response to a classic book called Halftime by Bob Buford. Has anybody heard of Halftime? It's a book, and the premise of Halftime is that you work a good chunk of your life. And then whenever you retire, you've made it there, and now you need to pivot and move into ministry full time. So whatever you happen to be doing with your days, in some way they should be serving in the church. David Bahnsen, he wrote a book that was really a rebuttal, and he called it full-time. And the idea is that we don't do some secular work for some odd number of years, and then we stop doing the secular work, and now we pivot into doing work that is godly work. The argument that David Bahnsen makes is that we're always working to serve God. Whatever age it is, whatever task that we're doing, we should be doing it as unto the Lord. And so it's probably not healthy to have a bifurcation, a separation of this idea of secular work and kingdom work. And so we'll talk through some of that. There's different ways that we learn the importance of work. Hopefully you can think of some stories along the way of a childhood job that you had, maybe mowing lawns, babysitting. Those are the classics, but there's all sorts of things. I worked on a goat dairy and started working when I was super young. Worked there helping my sister when I was probably about 5. And then I started getting paid when I was about 6. And so I did that all the way up. I would get off the bus, and then I would go do all the chores, feed all the goats. And when I was in about fourth grade, one of my friends said, hey, I'll help you today. And so he got off the bus, he helped me, we went around and did a bunch of chores, and we thought we were about done, and then the lady who we were working for, Lila, kind of sees out the window of the dairy barn a bunch of goats running around. They're not supposed to be out running around, they're supposed to be in a pen. And so she yells and screaming, and I was in big trouble. The other guy, the friend that was with me, he hopped on a bike and he was gone. So then we're trying to get all these goats back in, and I'm in tears, and we eventually get them all in, I think. But I'm still in tears by the time my dad comes pick me up at the end of the day, and so I'm getting my stern talking to for letting the goats out. Turns out it was my friend that like left the gate open, but it was my responsibility for having him there and all that. So learned a lot through that lesson. But what sticks with me, besides the trauma, is that in the talking to, at the end of it, she talked about how important the work that we do is. We're there on a dairy in southern Missouri, but it's important. And she was making the point that what we do and how well we do it is important. We don't want to get where we get a little flippant or where we're not thinking about what we're doing and we think that it's just something that's haphazard. And that stuck with me. That what we're doing is important, whatever it is, the task that we happen to be doing, if we're doing it as serving unto the Lord. So that's my story. And not every task is going to be our favorite. I don't know how many of you have worked on a dairy or a farm, but there's a lot of smelly tasks involved. And so they don't all have to be your favorite, but it does help you to have a mindset that they're all important, even if they're not our favorite. And so you may be thinking of the work that you have at work. Some of it might not be your favorite. Some of it you kind of just got to get through. But you should be doing it in a way which is trying to bring God glory. And if you can have a good attitude going through some of the things that everyone else just considers drudgery or whatever it happens to be, that's a way to be a light to those that you're working with, which can be super important. So I made the analogy before or the point that if you want your adult children doing something or your teenage children doing something, it's super hard if you just wake up and all of a sudden you think, you know what, my 17-year-old should be doing some work. And then all of a sudden you're going to try and get them to start working. And that may be what's needed. It is far easier if you have involved them in work in the years previous leading up to that. And it just becomes a way of life. And that's a normal thing for them, and it's a lot easier to slide into it. And so that's part of why we've tried to do a hobby farm. We haven't done it every time, but we try and do that, and we try and have something to fix up around the house. Our kids will probably pick something different, but the concept should be there where hopefully they do something similar with their kiddos to try and teach them work as they go through it. But for our kids, they get the joy of drywalling, cleaning up manure, and all those fun things that go with it. I was also thinking of all the work days that we have. When we put things together for Epic, it was exciting to see all the pictures that youth throughout the area have done for work days, whether it's picking up trash, making the community outreach bags. All of those things are important in helping our kids to see the work that we're doing is important in whatever capacity that we're getting to do it. So it can be helpful. All right, so reading through the New Testament, I love the constant comparison to agricultural references because it makes it easy for me to relate to. There's a lot of references to preparing the soil, to planting, to watering, and then we see that God gives the growth. And when you think of that analogy, as we go through it, there's a lot of work that we do that we don't necessarily see the end results. And I think that can be helpful for us as we think of all the work that we're doing from day to day. Maybe we don't get to see the results that we would want to see, but it doesn't mean that it's not important. It doesn't mean it's any less valuable as we go through it. Let's have somebody turn to Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. As we have a biblical understanding of work, I think we have to go back to the beginning to see how it unfolded.
Genesis. To work it and keep it.
We were created to tend, to work, to keep. That word keep is to sustain the garden. Work was a part of our purpose well before the fall. Work was something that was good. And God called his creation good, even after that verse right there. So working and sustaining the garden was a good thing. So we fast forward some unknown amount of time, but we make it to Genesis chapter 3, and that's where we have the fall. So after disobeying God, we read of the curses, and it's important to note what was cursed. So what was cursed in Genesis chapter 3 relating to work? The ground. Yeah, not work itself. And so it's going to have thistles, there'll be thorns. And so here in Oklahoma, there's these diabolical things called stickers. They're almost as evil as glitter. Like you get your hand in there and they will stick right in there. That's part of what was cursed. I was having to deal with all of those things, not work itself. The work itself was still good. And I think that's part of why we're given a parallel account with Eve. So whenever she receives her curse, it's going to be increased pain in childbirth, a couple other things that go with it. But it's not the child itself that's cursed. And so I think that kind of helps with that analogy there. It's not work itself that's cursed. It's the ground. And that affects how much ease our work could have been done with, or the effectiveness of our work. But it's not the work itself that becomes cursed. All right. There's a couple skeptical looks. So if we go through looking at some more of these, it's probably at this point that people are thinking of the caveats or like preconditions. I don't know how much everybody uses the word caveat. We use it a lot in the Air Force because it's things that we got to say before we can go on further as we get through it all. So a couple caveats as we go through it. So when and where we put our will over others, especially over God and his commandments, and we say something like, I'm going to do what I want, I would say that we're being sinfully selfish. And the root of most, maybe even all sin, I think is selfishness. And so whenever we think of being selfish, it could be as crude as what we said last week with you do you. It could be as poetic and eloquent as that saying, I'm a master of my fate and the captain of my soul. That's still the same idea that I'm going to control the things that are around me. So when we elevate our own desires and pleasures over the will of God and even over compassion for one another, we're making our will an idol. And so we'll see how this connects. Can somebody go to James chapter 4 and read verse 3? James 4, verse 3. Yeah, so there's an possibility that we're not using our work in a way to bring glory to God. So that can be a concern. So we don't want our work to be selfish so that we can spend it on ourselves. There's got to be some other purpose for it. And so that's what we'll keep teasing out. Let's go to Luke chapter 12. So if we're working just to spend things on our own pleasure, maybe to have the good life, there's this whole concept called FIRE, financially independent, retire early. The entire goal of it is let's work super, super hard, get enough funds, and then let's retire early, and then we'll have the good life. And we don't see that as a New Testament teaching. What we do see in Luke chapter 12 is something different. All right, it's a few verses. Can somebody read verses 16 through 21? Luke 12, 16 to 21.
Save my soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Thanks.
Yeah, this is a great cautionary tale when we look at a few different elements about work. So why do we work? Why do you all work? A lot of you are getting up and going to work.
You like to have something to be able to eat and live.
Yeah, so eat, live. We got some bills to pay. What else? Provide for our family. Yeah, that's important.
Sometimes you enjoy what you do.
Yeah, maybe we just get enjoyment out of it. Yeah, there's no end to the number of people that I've met that have retired. And then they're like, man, I just miss it. And then they go back, keep working for a while. Why else might we work?
To help others.
Yeah. I was hoping somebody would say, it's to help others. There are going to be some people who either can't work or have some unplanned need. I would say there's another element to that, helping others, the work of the church. So we see all sorts of ways that it's important to have a collection. There can be special collections, all these different ways in which we can maybe even sell a property. Lots of examples throughout the Bible of what we can use the resources that we are made stewards of for the kingdom. Yeah, that's one. In society. Yeah. So just society in and of itself. Like we need some sort of way in which we are creating good and resources, being good stewards of them. We think of the Israelites when they were taken into captive. They were supposed to pray for the area in which they're working, and they really integrate in a way that is helping the society by being good workers there. Yeah. Christians, we should be known as being good workers. I think all those are true. So we need food, place to live, helping others, working in the church, some sort of structure to society. All that is good. But what did the rich fool want to do in what we just read?
Sit back and take it easy.
Yeah, he wanted to stop working. That seems to be a lot of what this parable is about. It's not a caution of having more things. It's that he wanted it so he could stop working. And I think there's a big lesson for us in that one. Whenever we are saving year by year, hopefully we're saving all of those things, but why are we saving? Are we saving so that we can continue to work in a different capacity? Or are we like the rich fool here that says, you know what? Made it to 67 and a half. Now is my time. I want to eat, drink, and be merry and relax some. I don't think that is the model that we're given. I think we're always called to do work of some sort. It could be in a different capacity, doing different things. Retirement age is a real thing. All of that is true, but the work is what continues on.
I think like just about anything, the condition of the heart is really what God cares about.
Yeah.
Because there are plenty of examples of good stewardship or parables of the talents. Who got the most talents? The one that was given the most from the beginning. It wasn't about equality. It was teaching a different lesson.
So, right.
Condition of the heart. This guy was presumptuous. He assumed he had all this time. It was never enough, and he wanted to be able to do something that was not pleasing to God.
Right.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's spot on for this entire series, is the condition of the heart. How are we shaping our children to have a heart that is geared towards something that is godly, even when we think about work? And so we can talk about it in here, maybe convince you in 30, 40 minutes. I think most of you probably have this mindset already, but the challenge is how do we collectively, in our individual families and as a congregation, shape our children's heart to have a mind towards work and towards working through their entire life and not telling them, all right, this is it. We're going to set you up so that you have a better life than I did and you can be more relaxed than I am at this point. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. In that he didn't consider God's will. What did God want him to do?
Right.
I can't remember the scripture, but we're blessed in our lives. We work, and so we can help others.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And as you think of that idea, and then we have also the story of the rich young ruler, and we're not all called to give away everything. But maybe some of us are. And absolutely, we should be praying. We should be talking with godly men and women on what are some things that we can do here? What would be the most impactful use of the resources, including our time and ability to work, that we have? Yeah, excellent. All right, let's look at another verse. Let's go to Colossians chapter 3. Not only called to work, but we're called to work well. Colossians chapter 3, can somebody read verses 22 to 25, please?
Slaves, in all things, obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external service, as those who merely please men, but with the sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, do your work heartily, as for the Lord rather than for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of inheritance. It is the Lord Christ who you serve, for he who does wrong will receive the consequences of the wrong which he has done, and that without partiality.
Yeah. So let's think about this verse for a little bit. So here we are, Colossians chapter 3. He says, whatever work you're doing, it should be unto the Lord. What kind of work would they have been doing here? People reading this verse, what do we think was happening? Farming, yeah. Yeah, so we see a few times that we're writing to government officials that are addressed specifically. So we got farming and we got bureaucrats.
Fishing,
yeah. Yeah. That's probably a pretty good smattering. A lot of farmers. No programmers, probably. All right, so let's bring it forward. Today, what kind of work are we doing? Any stonemasons?
Mostly service.
Yeah, mostly service. Our entire industries kind of went to service-based. Not many of us are working from home. Some probably are. That would be super cool if there was a stonemason. You for sure need to do a Timothy class. So the reason I'm talking about those and trying to figure out what we're doing today as well, apparently we don't have as many people working today because I didn't get as many, but we'll go ahead and assume that we're doing servicey things. There's probably a few farmers still today as well. There's at least a few of you in here that are working in a factory of some sort, repair industry, all that. All those are jobs that are not that different than people around us. So we probably could even just use that word secular. Colossians, they were probably doing jobs that weren't that different than people that were around them. Today, for the most part, a couple people accepted, most of us are doing jobs that are pretty similar to everybody else around us. So it's not the work in and of itself that's completely different. The heart is a big part of it. The attitude in which we do it. And so there has to be something different about it because we're not extracting ourselves out of all of those regular day-to-day jobs that we're doing. We're just doing them in a different way. And as we just heard, we should be doing them well. So all of our work, I'd say, would be done as if it's done unto the Lord. There's another caution that we shouldn't confuse prominence with significance. Prominence with significance. So we probably can think of some things that are more prominent. Maybe as a comparison, if you think of homemakers, they're just not seen by as many people throughout the day as celebrities. I guess unless you are a YouTuber or a homemaker and you have your own channel, then you're probably seen by a ton of people. But some jobs just don't get out and seen by as many people. You may have a job that's in a cubicle. If you're in a cubicle, you don't see near as many people as some other professions that are out there. Interact with the mayor, politicians, all different things that are just different types of work. And that's a very different level of prominence, just how much we see them out and about. But we don't want to confuse that with significance. Whatever our task, whatever our job that we're given, it still has value. And I don't know exactly how to get around it. I think that's just part of the society that we're in. It's easier for us to jump to and try and compare prominence to significance in some way. But I would say we actively have to kind of work against that to realize that the path that people are choosing can be just as valuable. And where this comes back to it, we're talking about our children and raising our children a lot in this class. Whenever our kid comes to us and says, I want to be X, we're going to have an initial micro expression. Do we want them being that thing? I was listening to somebody, and they were talking about their kid. They were so excited because he was three. And he came running up, and he's like, you know what? I really think I want to be a missionary or maybe even a firefighter, but it may be a dinosaur. And so he still hadn't worked it all out yet. So he was still getting through all of the details. But our kids are going to come up, and they're going to say, I want to be X. And is our first response, how can they use that in service to God? And then trying to help them through, figure out how they're going to do it. Or is it, ooh, your bills are going to be super tight if you choose to do this one, which may be true. I mean, some jobs, they just pay less. But let's take the alternative. Let's say they come to us and they have some job that is going to be very lucrative, but it might be a stumbling block for them. Maybe money is, we can know fairly early on if that might be a concern for our children. Maybe that might be a stumbling block for them. So it's definitely not the same answer for all of our kids. But what I'm saying is it's important for us to not confuse prominence with significance when our kids are deciding what they're going to do. Because the work that they're doing, we don't want them to feel like it is of less service to society or to the kingdom, just based on the task itself, what it is that they're doing. Some professions are blue collar, some white collar, some are camouflage collar. I always get a bit uncomfortable when anybody thanks me for my service because I really just consider it part of my vocation. That's what I have chosen to do for the part, and it makes me feel uncomfortable because there's a lot of other vocations that somebody may have put just as much or more thought into, and I don't want to get in that area where it's more prominent and they think that it has more significance for what they're doing. Bible tells us that we have a job and we should be doing it well. I've shared a few times things about FFA, and it was a big part of our life growing up. My dad was an FFA advisor. When I was young, he taught vocational agricultural, or vocational, get it right here. Vocational agriculture. So that's what it was whenever I was young. And they had an emblem, everything said vocational agricultural. Agriculture. And then, I don't know what grade, I'll just make something up and say seventh grade. It was before I got to high school, they switched it to agriculture education. Agricultural education. Just a name change, keeping up with the times, all of that. Vocational probably sounded too old or something. And I never liked the change. I thought it was a terrible change. Because that idea of vocation comes from the Latin word that means to call out. You're vocalizing something. And it's tied to the idea of a calling. And that's why we have that term even today. We'll talk about somebody has a calling for something. It means, what is your vocation? And I think that's helpful. We have a vocation. There's a calling that we should be doing something and seeing how we're doing that something in service to God as a vocation. It's been a inherently Judeo-Christian thought to think about being called to a specific work. And so I like that word, vocation. And so if you go up to somebody, you might say, what do you do? You might even say, what's your vocation? So kudos to you for using the formal terminology in there. But what you're really asking them is, what do you feel that you've been called to do? What decisions have you made that have led you to where you're at in a way that you feel you are serving God in those decisions? And so when we talk to our children, I think it's fine. We can use that word vocation to help them think, all right, what is it that you are being called to do? And that helps them see, how do we weave in the things that I'm doing into a biblical view and an understanding of what it is that we should be doing? Yes.
I think there's
something worthwhile, you need to go to college, you need to have some kind of university degree.
Right.
Well, first of all, our society would fall apart in no time if we didn't have a tradespeople. We didn't have skilled people in all kinds of trades.
Right.
And there seems to be a new realization that, you know what, people can make a good living working in some of those trades.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe as a society we're reducing that kind of a stigma. You're just a plumber. You work with bricks all day. You know, just condescending kind of attitude about it. When really, they're doing something that's absolutely necessary for our society, our homes, our businesses, and need to be appreciated.
Yeah. And we probably could talk about that for a while, because that's a biggie. And I went into this saying that it's important how we address, how we talk about the different jobs, because it does shape our children's heart and their perspective on what's valuable. And I remember with some of my peers, good friend that I went through college with, his dad absolutely told him, you need to have a job that you take a shower before going to work instead of when you come home from work. And it was a value judgment. He was saying these jobs are more valuable than the blue-collar jobs. And that's dangerous. And for all sorts of reasons. I think the biggest reason it's dangerous is because it gives us a skewed view of what we're called to do as biblical work. And I think that's by far the biggest. But I also think there's a lot of societal reasons as well. You can actually probably make more going to a trade school than you can just a generic four-year degree that you don't know what you're going to use it for afterwards. Absolutely are going to make more, especially out the door, likely even over your career. But that's not to downplay that we do need professional degrees for some things. We actually still have a place for education on some of those. And so the hard part that tasking all of you with is to communicate that to our young people, that one of these is not more valuable than the other. That we can all find a way to serve in the kingdom, whatever it is that we're leaning towards, our aptitude, our skill, that we're going to go forward and make. Yeah, great point. That's why I'm excited about the Timothy class. I get to do all sorts of things in there, but a lot of those are just going to be things that are important. And if we plant a seed all along the way, we may do a woodworking day, and there's going to be a couple people that say, I don't know what I want to do in life, but I know it's not this. So they're going to make it through a few hours, and they're not going to want to do it at all, which is valuable. Now at least they know. There's going to be a couple other people that say, this is pretty cool. I either want to do this, or I'm at least sold enough that I want to get me at least a handsaw so I can make something on whatever other profession that I have. So, yeah, excellent. Yes?
So one thing we've tried to hammer home, we start pretty early, you know, even with that, the eight. You know.
Hammer home. That's good. Hammer home. That was good.
Oh, yeah. No pun intended. There are plenty of mediocre people out there in the workforce, and I think part of that is because you have people that have a gift but don't have the training with it, or they have the training but they don't really have the gift or the passion. And what I try to emphasize to them is those that really excel are the ones that find what their gift is, what they're good at, what they have a great passion for, and then pair it with the training. And then I preface that by saying, first, following the Lord. You're trying to find ways to serve the kingdom first. Daddy doesn't care if you become a lawyer or a plumber or HVAC or an accountant, whatever. Figure it out. That's fine. That's secondary in importance. I didn't mean to point to Dave when I said accountant. But, that's not what's the most important. God will bless you regardless.
Yeah, that's good. And that applies for the work that we're doing. Absolutely. There's going to be things that we fit into and need some of the skills, some of the training to go into that. And it may just be, it's super hard whenever you've started down a path to say, Mom and Dad, it was my junior year, but I think I got to change my major. That may happen. Or you may work for 3 or 4 years and say, you know what? I'm going to do a left turn. Sometimes that happens. And if that is in a way in which you bring more glory to God, that's value added, as hard as that is. Some of you are maybe hitting that.
I came into class late, so if you already talked about this, I apologize.
We started out with punctuality.
Okay. I wanted to illustrate that point for you, so you're welcome.
Thank you.
There's a passage in Proverbs that sticks with me. It's Proverbs 16:9. It said, "The mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps." And I think that's true with regard to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You might decide, I want to be this. I want to be this vocation or do this job. And along the way, you find out, okay, maybe not.
Right.
And something else comes into view that hinders mm-hmm. you, and you go that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be wonderful. We've been talking about this as our job and talking about it in relation to our children, which is good. I think that applies. We also can make sure that we're thinking about it in relation to work that we're doing in the kingdom, in the church specifically as well. And so I'm stealing this from a book, but there was a congregation that had two men that were serving as deacons, and one of them was doing the finances, and the other one was counting people every Sunday. And then he would update the board. He would go up there. And then the guy that was counting everybody didn't look super happy doing it. And so one of the elders noticed that he didn't look super happy and said, "Just seeing how things are going, you don't look super happy in your service here." And he said, "Full-time, I'm an accountant. I spend my days doing all of this. And so I don't know. Maybe I'm just not challenged enough, and I'm counting people and putting it on the board." Which is good, so don't feel bad on that one. Then they went to the person that was actually doing the books, and he was miserable. He was not an accountant, and he said, "I did this a few years ago when there was nobody to do it. I said that I would help out, and now I've been stuck into it, and I don't even think I'm doing it right. This is going to come back to haunt us at some point, and I'm in over my head." And so they just talked to him and just switched him. And now you have the guy that's putting the update on the board, loving it. And he's great. And then the other guy, the accountant, he's loving his job as well. And that happens in the church. And it also happens in our professions as well. When maybe it's just not a right fit. And sometimes grinning and bearing it isn't the right answer as we go through it. Maybe it's asking some people that you trust, some mentors, and say, "You know what, maybe I should be doing something different here."
An assessment thing where you find out where your part was in church,
right,
and in the worship, and your gifts. And I was amazed at how many people really fit what that assessment said. Mine was mercy, and you know, for a long time I thought, "Well, why am I?" Well, it's because the things I like to be involved in, but I didn't know that. I didn't have a name for it. And this was, to me, it was so interesting how that assessment really helped people to know where they fit in, you know, in different parts in the church.
Yeah, has everybody done those at some point? I don't know if you're going to raise your hand if you haven't done them. But there are all sorts of ones online that you can do as well. It's kind of fun to do them sometimes as a congregation. It's kind of everybody sees at one time. I don't know that I like it because every time that I do it, I think I'm going to have mercy or compassion as my gift. Every time it tells me it's administration. And so then I got to make some spreadsheet to prove why it's wrong. Happens to me every time. So you made a great point. And in Psalm 77, we see things like lightning and thunder, things that are created that are personified and praised for what they're doing by doing what they were created to do. We don't see lightning praised for doing something other than what it was created to do. And I think that's true of us as well. We were created for work. That's part of why we were created. And we see that from the very beginning. We see it mentioned over and over. And so whenever we are doing work and doing it well, that is a form of praise in what we're able to offer God. We couldn't get through a lesson about work without going to Proverbs 6. Can somebody go to Proverbs 6 and read verses 6 through 11, please? Proverbs 6, 6 through 11.
Go to the end, old sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer, gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, old sluggard? I like to say it like that.
Yeah, thank you.
When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond and your need like an armed man.
Thank you. That was good. Absolutely. Proverbs is full of these. Don't be the sluggard. Don't be slothful. All of those things, and they're tied to preparation. And I'm tying them to an overall concept of biblical work. This is what we should be doing. Right? Yeah, there's all sorts of fables, parables, all those things that have been built off of this comparison and this analogy. You don't want to just be someone that goes off and devours other stuff. That's usually the comparison with a grasshopper, is it's eating work that somebody else did compared to the ant that prepared, foresight, worked together, all of those things. And we've said this relates to our work in the church as well. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2. Can somebody read verses, or just one verse, verse 10. Ephesians 2:10.
For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand, that we should walk in them.
So we don't talk about Greek words much, which is good for me. I'm not a Greek scholar. But ever so often, I'll read a commentary. And for this passage, it's not talking about charity, because there are other words that specifically talk about charity. And we are supposed to be doing charity. That is something that we're called to do. But this one is really the word work. That's part of the good work that was prepared for us, is the work labor. And so we are working in the church that's actually work. There is work to be done inside the church and what we've been called to do. And I think it's important. So there's another phrase, amusement. We've probably heard that a lot. A word we don't use as much is muse. So muse means to work. So that's some element of your work. There's even that phrase that somebody would be your muse. That just means it's somebody that can get you to do the work that you're doing. And then Latin, when we mean the opposite of work, we just put an A in front of it. So that's how we get it to be opposite. That's where we get amusement. So when you think of amusement, you're just thinking no work. And that's the whole idea of an amusement park. Don't do any work. You go there to not do work because other people are going to do it for you. And there are all sorts of clever books. There's one called Amusing Ourselves to Death. It's just the idea that we have filled our time with amusement, not working. And I think that can be a concern for us. As Christians, we don't want to be filling our time with non-work. And it's a whole other lesson. We're not going to be able to get to it. But there is an importance in not working for a time. There's a value in just pondering, to sit there and think about things as well. The trouble is we're not really good at it. Instead of just sitting there and pondering something, we fill it with some sort of frivolity. Today, probably pulling out our phone and playing a game. A study just heard recently, fascinating. They took a bunch of people and said, would you rather sit here in a room by yourself for 10 minutes or get a mild shock, think like a fly swatter that zaps the flies, get a mild shock, and then we'll give you your phone back. Almost everybody took the shock and wanted their phone back. The idea of sitting there with 10 minutes with nothing to do just caused so much anxiety. So we are not good at just sitting and pondering. But that's probably a whole other lesson on sitting and pondering. Probably 50,000. That's what our little fly swatter says it is for zapping flies. It's the amperage that gets you. But yeah, probably one of those fly swatters that'll get your finger. So it's important to have some time for pondering. Biblical rest, whole nother lesson on biblical rest as well. But I don't know that our concern is working too much. And we do hear lessons occasionally that say we've got to make sure that we don't work too much. And I don't know that that's really the problem. It's probably more working for the wrong reasons or working in a wrong manner. I think in our society, it's probably a lot bigger concern of being too well off to where we can not work for a good chunk of our week. And we're okay. We can work very few hours, actually work, and still get kind of the basics that we need. And even if we are working full time, all the time that are not working, we still have to decide, what are we going to do with those hours? Are we using them in a productive way to further the kingdom? Or are we filling them with some form of amusement or frivolity? And that's challenging. Hopefully that is challenging and get you to think about it a little bit. Because when we go back, look at the Old Testament structure, it was how many days of work?
Six.
Yeah, so 6 days of work and then a day of rest. Yeah, I think that's a probably fairly valid model to think about today as well. Are we really working hard for 6 days? And then are we really resting for a day? There's a lot of wisdom and biblical guidance in that model. Work hard, take a rest. Work hard, take a rest. And I think that's a healthy rhythm. We don't have work a little bit and then fill our time with amusement. Maybe selfish time, and then get back and work a little bit, amusement. So I don't know. This is as much a challenge to me as it is to everybody else. We've got a couple minutes. I do want to go to Hebrews chapter 4 before we say a prayer. Hebrews chapter 4. I'm going to read verses 1 through 13. Therefore, while the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us fear lest any of you should seem to have failed to reach it. For good news came to us just as to them, but the message they heard did not benefit them because they were not united by faith with those who listened. For we who have believed enter that rest, as he has said, as I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Although his works were finished from the foundation of the world, for he has somewhere spoken of the seventh day in this way. And God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again in this passage he said, they shall not enter my rest. Since therefore it remains for some to enter it, and those who were formerly received the good news failed to enter because of disobedience, again he appoints a certain day, today, saying through David so long afterward, in the words already quoted, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. Let us therefore strive to enter that rest so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. For the whole world of God is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing to the division of the soul and the spirit, of joints and marrow, and discerning the thoughts and intentions of the heart. And no creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him whom we must give account. We have an eternal rest, and that's what we're going towards. So continue to think about these things, talk about them with one another, and share the wisdom that you have on all of these as we work as a congregation to help instill the idea of work to our youth. Let's have a prayer. God, we're so thankful for the time that we have here together. We're thankful for the opportunity that we have to serve in so many different capacities. Help us to understand work and to do all things to bring you glory in the tasks that are before us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.